So good morning, everyone. My name is Nicolas Geoffrey. So I'm a PhD student at the University of Pierre-Marc here in Paris, France. And today I want to talk to you about JavaScript. I'll talk to you about memory safety, and in particular, memory safety for low-level software-hardware interaction. So this work was done at the University of Illinois with John Criswell and Vikram Advay. So we all know today how memory safety is important to build secure systems against buffer overflows or dangling pointers. And the good news is that there are tons of ways of building secure memory safe systems. You can use safe languages such as Java or C Sharp, or you could use memory safety tools that whose overheads improve over time for C-like languages like safecode, secured, baggy bounds checking that we heard yesterday, softbound, etc. And a great step forward for having memory safety for the whole software stack today is that there's even memory safety for operating systems. Singularity and Spin are examples of operating system written in a type-safe language. There's also the Secure Virtual Architecture project, which provides memory safety for community operating systems, for example, Linux, written in C. The problem was a problem that these systems laid aside or omitted is the problem of low-level software-hardware interactions. So what do I define as a low-level software-hardware interaction? It's an interaction that manipulates hardware resources, and that is below the semantics of the programming language. So for a compiler, this instruction may look perfectly type-safe, but however has the potential of corrupting the control flow or the data flow. Let me give you a couple of examples that operating systems use. Processor state, I/O objects, and MMU mappings. In the case of processor states, operating systems directly manipulate buffer of processor states. So for a compiler, a loaded store on this buffer may look perfectly type safe. However, it has the potential of subverting control flow data flow. So in this example, the operating system has a pointer on a buffer, which happens to be a processor state. And imagine the operating system performs a write on this buffer and the write on the program counter of the buffer. Now, when this processor state will be scheduled on CPU again, you'll get a completely different control flow than the one that was expected. A second example is with I/O. So in typical hardware, I/O memory and RAM is mapped into the same address space. However, I/O memory is completely different than RAM. First, I/O memory is incompatible with standard compiler analysis. So a load on an I/O memory may not reflect last store on that I/O memory. Second, I/O memory has side effects on hardware. And sometimes these side effects may lead to hardware corruption. So for example, the E1000E bug on Linux 2.6 it's the E1000E bug is an invalid write on I/O memory. And what happens is that this invalid write damaged the E1000E network card. So this example shows that with I/O, you can have, with I/O bugs, you can have potential denial of service attacks if you're able to log in to a machine which happens to have an E1000E network card and damage the network access. A third example is with MMU. So with MMU, the operating system has the potential of violating the type safety that was inferred by the compiler. So in this example, you have P1, which is of type T1, and P2, which is of type T2. Now, the mapping is correct on the MMU between virtual memory and physical memory. But the operating system may do an update in this configuration and change the mapping for the P1 pointer. So now the P1 pointer points to data, which is of type T2. Now this will lead to corruption at runtime, but when the compiler analyzes the update on MMU, it looks for the compiler perfectly type safe. A second example is with MMU is that the operating system can map kernel pages into user space. So in the example, you have the red physical page, which is mapped by kernel memory. And imagine the operating system maps this page into user space. Then you can have any kinds of potential bugs or exploits. There are three examples that we found for the Linux 2.4 bugs, with the Linux 2.4, sorry, kernel, which uses this kind of configuration to gain root accesses. So the MMU bugs and the 8000E bug I've just shown you are examples of bugs that happen during the low-level software-hardware interactions. And what we need today is solutions before these kind of bugs become more sophisticated and commonplace. So in this context, our contribution is SVOS. SVOS provides comprehensive memory safety for low-level software-hardware interactions. And we ported the Linux 2.4 kernel on SVOS to provide complete memory safety, traditional memory safety, and memory safety for low-level software-hardware interactions. SVOS uses compiler analysis and runtime checks, and I will show you that this runtime checks had little overhead above and beyond traditional memory safety. And finally, in the talk, I will show you that SVOS is effective at preventing software-hardware exploits. All right, so I've shown you the motivation of the work. Now I'll go you the high-level solutions of SVOS. So what do we need to build SVOS? We need a system that already provides traditional memory safety. And SVOS will preserve this memory safety by extending it to low-level software-hardware interactions. So it can be operating system written in type-safe languages, such as Singularity, or it could be an operating system, that community operating system ported to the Securvator architecture, which provides memory safety through compiler techniques to community operating systems. So I'll give you the high-level solutions of the three examples I've given you. There are other solutions in the paper, but for brevity, I will only show you the three I've mentioned. So in case of processor states, we define a new instruction that the operating system will call. And this new instruction saves the old state, which is on CPU, and restores a new state. The state is saved in internal SVOS memory, and the instruction will return an opaque handle to the operating system so that the operating system cannot manipulate the data. The good thing about this solution is that the policy is left into the operating system. What we only do is switch a processor state from memory to CPU. So scheduling, context switching, signal delivery, all of this is implemented into the operating system. So the second example was So we define two new kinds of instructions. We define a new instruction to map I/O memory into the address space, and we define new instructions to load and store I/O objects. Now, with these new instructions, we add runtime checks to ensure that regular load stores will never access memory. Regular load store will always access memory, and I/O access will only access I/O memory. So in this example, you have P1, which is a memory pointer, a regular memory pointer. You won't be able to do an I/O store. P2, which is an I/O pointer, you won't be able to do a regular store. The third example was MMU. So what we do with SVOS is that we add runtime checks during MMU updates. With this runtime checks, the operating system won't be able to map kernel memory into user space. Plus, we verify that the mapping will be consistent with the type that were inferred by the compiler. The first example I've given you the motivation, you won't be able to do it. You won't be able to map kernel memory into user space. The second example, mapping inconsistent data, you can't do it anymore. So we do this by intercepting MMU updates. These interceptions look similar to what VMMs provide. However, in our system, it's limited to a single domain. So VMMs provide do runtime checks on MMU updates to protect multiple domains against each other. In our system, it's more fine-grained in that it's to protect data into a single domain. So now the design of SVOS. So we've built SVOS on top of the Sekulvetra architecture, which is a compiler based virtual machine. Sekulvetra architecture is capable of hosting a commodity operating system, such as Linux, and provides traditional memory safety guarantees for control flow and data flow integrity. So how does SVA work? You have your operating system, the source code of your operating system, and you change the source code so that the allocators in the operating system interact with SVA. You also change the source code to remove all assembly language, assembly instruction into the operating system and call SVA special instructions for interacting with the hardware. So now that you have this modified source code, SVA will compile the kernel and do static analysis, add runtime checks to provide memory safety, and co-generate the operating system to native. At runtime, the operating system runs above the SVA virtual machine, and the SVA virtual machine provides a library for the hardware software instructions, plus a library for the runtime checks. So to move from SVA to SVOS, what we need is extend the SVA software hardware interactions so that now we control the software hardware interactions. And SVOS will enforce memory safety for low-level operations by using static analysis when possible and add runtime checks when necessary. So for the three examples, processor state, IO, MMU, I will give you the implementation in SVOS. So to save the old state and place a new state in a single instruction, we define a new instruction, SVA swap integer, that will be called by the operating system. So this instruction will return an opaque handle, and the buffer process state will be saved into SVOS memory, and once it is scheduled on a CPU, it will be released. For IO memory, we change the allocator in the operating system to use a pseudo allocator for IO. And this allocator will map IO memory into the virtual address space. We also add new instruction for IO reads and writes, SVA IO write read byte, SVA write byte. So that's the changes that must be made into the operating system. Now for SVA, the compiler will mark IO memory as type unknown. And that means that each access on IO memory will yield a load store check. And for objects, regular memory objects that alias with disk memory, you also have load store checks. For MMU, we define a VMM-like interface to declare and update MMU mappings. So typical MMU implemented in hardware, you have multiple level of mappings. Here I'm giving you an example of a two-level mapping. So you have to declare page table pages, you call SVA declare L1 page, SVA declare L2 page, and to update MMU mappings, you have the other instructions. SVOS will do runtime checks to ensure that type memory stays consistent. So what happens with SVS compiler is that the pointer analysis segregates data by types, and SVOS ensures this stays consistent. The second kind of runtime checks is to divide memory so that SVOS memory kernel code will never be able to access SVOS memory. User space code will never be able to access kernel memory, and finally, IO memory and regular kernel memory will never be able to access IO memory. So we have ported the Linux 2.4 on SVOS. So there was an original port of Linux 2.4 on SVA. We added to this original port 100 lines of change. Here are a couple of examples of instructions that in Linux that must be changed either to SVA instructions or must be changed to call this instruction in the implementation. So for example, the switch to macro in Linux calls the SVA swap integer. The read byte is changed to SVIO read byte. Set PTE, which updates a level one mapping, calls SVA update level one mapping. And PTE alloc 1 calls SVA declare L1 page. So these are a couple of examples. There are others kind of changes. On the compiler side, what the compiler needs to know is which is the allocator for IO objects. So Linux has an allocator called IO remap, and the compiler will use this, will recognize this allocator so that we'll be able to do a compiler analysis on IO objects. So does it work? We've done three kinds of experiments. First kind is we have tested two real-world NMU exploits that happens on Linux 2.4. I mentioned a third one in the introduction. We didn't have the source code available for that exploit, so we couldn't apply it. We have injected errors into our Linux 2.4 port by adding new system calls to trigger these errors. And finally, we have done a paper study of the 8000E Intel network bug. So this bug only occurs on Linux 2.6, not 2.4, and so we couldn't apply it to our port. So for the NMU exploits. So the first exploit, this is what happens. So the first exploit uses the fork and imap system calls to map a physical page multiple times. There's a bug in the bug that occurs into the operating system is that once all the forks are dead, the operating system thinks the physical page is not mapped anymore. However, the original process is able to maintain a mapping to this physical page. So if the kernel happens to allocate an object and use that physical memory and use that physical page, the user space application had the potential to use that page and get real privileges. So with the new NMU checks I've mentioned in SVOS, the exploit wasn't able to do that. The second exploit, it uses a missing error check into the mremap implementation in Linux 2.4. And what happens is that the operating system release a page table page into the page table cache with mappings into the page table page. That remain. And if these mappings contains mappings to kernel objects, and a user space application is able to use this page table page, it was able to gain root privileges by using the kernel objects. So since in SVOS, pages that is mapped in SVOS, what we do is that we always clear the mappings when the page table page is released. So it's important to notice that these two exploits were detected by SVOS with our new runtime checks, but were not by SVA. So we also have injected errors into our operating system, into Linux 2.4. The first error was modifying the processor state. So in SVA, what happens is the control flow, we were able to modify the control flow. With SVOS, we caught an invalid integer to pointer cast because we casted the opaque handle that were returned by the SVS swapping to JUR instruction, and this was invalid and called by SVOS. Second kind of error was double mapping of a type-safe memory object. So in SVA, what happens is that the subsequent store on this double mapping succeeded and was able to put arbitrary data on a type-safe object. On SVOS, the second mapping was caught by the MMU checks. So the so triggered an error, and the subsequent store could not execute. We also have injected a third kind of error, which we were able to do in SVA, is modifying the metadata of SVA with incorrect bounds for all objects, so that by doing this, we were able to disable all the memory safety guarantees that were provided by SVA. With SVOS, since kernel code cannot access SVA memory, the access to SVA memory was caught by the MMU checks. And finally, we have studied the E1000E bug. So what happened with the E1000E bug is that there was a compare and exchange instruction on the dangling pointer. The instruction thought the dangling pointer was pointing to code memory. However, it was coding to I/O memory and the I/O registers of the E1000E network card. The compare and exchange instruction has unpredictable behavior on I/O memory. And in the case of the E1000E network card, unpredictable meant damage of the network card. So with SVOS, we would have caught this bug at its first occurrence. Because first, so we have two layers of defense. First, the operating system wouldn't have been able to map I/O memory into pages where there was code memory before. And if the compare and exchange was operating on regular memory, it couldn't have done that because there are load store checks on I/O memory. In terms of performance, we have run the THTTPD web server on this configuration with 1 gigabytes per second network. The graph shows you a file transfer from the server to users. So the x-axis is the file size, and the y-axis is the performance normalized to native Linux. So higher is better. We are comparing the overheads of SVA and SVOS. And what we can see is that for file size below 64, we are having like 25% overheads. But after 64, the overheads become negligible. So for the overheads until 64 kilobytes, we have also measured why such overheads. And you can find the overheads on MicroBenchmark in the paper. So SVOS also has a negligible overhead on user space applications. We have benchmarked the BZIP2 lame and pull applications, which are I/O intensive, but most of the computation happens in user space. So for such applications, SVOS has really negligible overheads. So as future work, we would like to improve the static analysis of SVOS so that we reduce runtime checks and the overheads. We also like to add new security properties by using SVO and SVOS, for example, information flow control. And finally, we're interested in applying SVOS to other kinds of systems. So it can be applying SVOS to an operating system written in a type-safe language, such as Singularity. But we could also apply SVOS to systems that manipulate hardware-software interactions. For example, JVMs with user space threads and hypervisors. So in conclusion, the contribution of our work is that we have identified memory safety violations for low-level software hardware operations. And SVOS is the first system that provides comprehensive memory safety guarantees for such operations. SVOS leaves the control of this interaction under the operating systems and incurs a little runtime overhead above SVA. So with that, I'll take questions.
Go ahead. Hi, Paolo Milani, Technical University of Vienna. I'm curious, how do you preserve type safety across MMU remapping? Do you keep type information on the physical about the physical memory instead of about the virtual memory, or do you?
Yes.
Okay.
So that's provided by SVA.
Okay, so in SVA memory, you have type information on the physical memory.
Yeah. So okay. SVA segregates data by types. So for a physical page, we know which type is in.
Thank you.
Do we have any more questions? Okay, let's thank the speaker.